The Nail in the Coffin!
All right, welcome to The Nail in the Coffin, part of the world-famous Evergreen Podcast Network. I'm Tom Valentino, joined by Travis Yulee. It's Thursday night. Trav, how you doing, buddy?
Good evening, Tino. I'm doing well, buddy. How about yourself?
I'm good. I'm very excited that we have March Madness this year, and it's finally here. We've got one of the first four games going on in the background. We get to watch the Buckeyes tomorrow.
Yeah, I have to admit I missed the, like, noon Thursday like onslaught where it's just like all of a sudden there's games on True TV and you're looking up what channel True TV is and all that garbage. I missed that a little bit, but yeah, I think pretty much everyone's just glad that we're getting a tournament this year.
That's the annual SEO sweepstakes, which website gets the top ranking in Google search results for what channel is True TV.
Exactly.
But, hey, the Buckeyes are playing on Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock on CBS against Oral Roberts. And to help us get ready for that, we are joined by Whitney Harding, sports reporter and anchor for NBC4 in Columbus. Hello, Whitney. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good. Good. Ready to get this thing. Like you said, I'm just ready for March Madness. I mean, oh, my gosh. We missed it last year. Really missed it.
It was tough. It was a bummer, man. Big time downer. It was right at the beginning. I don't think we fully realized what we were exactly getting into in terms of the sports calendar being, shuffled up, so to speak. But that was a big hit to start things off.
Yeah, everybody, Ivy League canceled. Everybody's like, that's crazy. And now
the fact that looking back, we were all like, oh, the Ivy League, they don't know what they're doing.
They don't know what's up.
Big 12, we're going to follow their lead.
Oh, we were all young and naive.
Right. True.
So tell me about these Buckeyes. We were talking before we were starting to record here, and full disclosure, I've watched two games this season. They were both fantastic games, but the Buckeyes ended up on the wrong end of both of them. It was the home game against Michigan a few weeks ago, and then the Big Ten championship game on Sunday afternoon there. Team looks good, but what do I need to know here?
Well, they are good. I mean, that is the thing to know. I mean, they definitely have a chance in this. It's just like everything with the NCAA tournament, it's going to come down to matchups and if it's going to work in their favor. And the best thing about Ohio State is they can score from anywhere. They really can. Offensively, they are balanced. They've got different varieties of players at different positions. The negative for them is defense, especially inside, because they are an undersized team. However, I will say to that, they are one of the most physical teams that you will see. And when you get into the tournament and you've got some teams that run up and down the court and things like that, they're not used to physical. And I think you can see with them, physical doesn't mean tall. It just means they're going to make you work. And that's exhausting if you're not used to going up against that.
And it's interesting because we watched them in, and I think this was sort of the ongoing trend all season. The one thing that really gave them trouble, and I think if you watched Ohio State and you looked at the matchups, the first thing you looked for is, all right, are there any like big physical 7-footers that can give them headaches? We saw Dickinson from Michigan, right, and then Coburn from Illinois, who, I mean, they beat Michigan, but Dickinson kind of had a great day, he's a tough matchup for E.J. Liddell, especially with Kyle Young out. Yes. They don't have one of those big guys that can really, really contain a big, like legit strong 7-footer.
Right.
And they showed that in the tournament, and they've kind of showed it all season. And it seems like the matchups in their bracket are relatively favorable.
Yes, I would agree.
And I don't know. I've seen their defense. Yeah, it definitely something to be desired. And I've seen people out there with like advanced metrics say no one who's had a defense ranked as poorly as Ohio State's has ever won at all. I guess take what you want from that. But as you look at it, and that sort of, I'll go back to what you just mentioned sort of with physicality. The big sort of X factor, I think, question mark going into tomorrow, and we still don't really know, and you already alluded that you'll find out more tomorrow, is Kyle Young, who I think I don't know about you, I kind of gained a new appreciation for him later in the season because he really was that guy. Oh, Henry. Interrupting, thanks.
He's agreeing with you.
He's agreeing, yeah.
He was a guy that it seemed like he started to stand out more as the sort of emotional, reliable senior leadership on the floor that I don't know that I really noticed from him before, I don't know, maybe the last half of the season.
Well, and what's so kind of sad about what happened with Kyle Young in that game is he finally was healthy again. And that's something that he has struggled with his entire career at Ohio State is injuries, but it's also because of how he plays. I mean, he is that guy that will just lay it all out there and it's great to have. He is the emotional like fire plug of this team. But also with that, I mean, he throws his body around and he gets injured. So I think that you try to keep him out as long as you possibly can. I will say, I don't know if this means anything, but there have been pictures posted on social media of the team at practice. Like they all lined up and took a picture and Kyle Young was not there. So okay. That makes you wonder, is he in Indianapolis right now?
We don't even know if he traveled with the team.
I mean, he was there for the Big Ten final.
Or if he stayed there with the team.
Exactly. So okay. We don't know. Hopefully they may not need him for the first game and he can even get more rest. But back to like the big men defensive, adjustments, I think kind of Travis, you were alluding to this while the defense throughout the season hasn't been great over the last few games when it's mattered, it's been a lot better. And that's what you're wanting this time of year is to be moving in that upwards, you know, direction. So,
and it's kind of been, it feels like it's kind of been a tale of two seasons just over the last, I don't know, 3 weeks, they were in really good position. It looked like they were one of the four teams that was lined up to get a one seed going into the tournament. Then they lost four in a row, lost to a couple good teams, lost to Michigan State in a close game. And so you started to look at them like, okay, what's going on here? And then in the Big Ten tournament, they showed a lot of heart. They played four games in 4 days. You could tell when they came out against Illinois, they were really flat. Their legs were like, they mentioned it on the broadcast, they were just dead. Every shot for the first like 10 minutes was short. Mm-hmm. You could just tell the fatigue was setting in for a team that went to overtime the day before and had played one more game than the team they were going against. But they fought back, played their asses off, made it forced overtime, looked like they could have maybe taken it. So they showed, you know, they're capable of playing with those teams.
Right.
And like you mentioned, I thought they showed a lot in the tournament. I personally, when they were going in the tournament, was sort of the mindset that I don't really care if they advance in the Big Ten tournament that much. I'd almost take the rest because they were, I don't know, I felt like 4 games in 4 days might be a lot to ask, then turn around and start the tournament. So mm-hmm. I guess, what are you hearing about where they're at mentally? Because that's kind of a roller coaster. I think the way they bounce back in the tournament indicates positive things. But I guess where are they at right now is as they enter this and they go against Oral Roberts.
So after the loss in the championship game, I mean, they clearly were just emotionally spent. Normally we get to speak with like two players after a game and we only got to talk to CJ Walker. I will say CJ Walker was pretty upbeat about how he was feeling, where the team was headed. And I think that going into the Illinois game, one thing that I found that was interesting was Dwayne Washington Jr. I asked a question and his answer was, you know, we've beaten teams to get here that we didn't beat yet this year. And he was right. The only team in the Big Ten tournament they faced who they'd already beaten was Illinois. They had not beaten Minnesota. They had not beaten Purdue. And they had not, like Tom, like you said, they had not beaten Michigan. So I think when the team looks back on that as a whole, which is what you do like a day or two removed from a tough loss, you see, okay, look how much better we've gotten. And then what also you can really look at, and I hope that they have, is how much better they got within the Illinois game. Because that's what's so big in the tournament is in-game adjustments and figuring out how to fix things. And you'll watch Kofi Coburn came out and he was just taking over that game. But then once the game started to turn around, especially in the second half, it was where he was catching the ball. He was very uncomfortable at catching the ball.
He was a little further out from the basket than he had been earlier. Yeah.
And if you watch him shoot free throws, he's not a great jump away from the basket shooter.
Outside of like 3 or 4 feet, not a whole lot to his game.
So, and that's how, if you are an undersized big man, that is how you defend tall guys. And that's where that physicality comes into it, because EJ Liddell, fingers crossed, Kyle Young, but those guys, Zed Key is going to be key. Didn't mean that, but pushing these guys away from the basket and forcing them to do jump shots. And that also is where EJ Liddell is huge, because he can step out and take threes. And that's why he does that.
Yeah. It's, I like that you bring up EJ Liddell, because I don't know if anyone really thought about him or talked about him much coming into this season. I thought he showed glimpses last year, but he didn't get a ton of minutes. He wasn't like a huge part of what they did. He was sort of a role player off the bench guy.
He was behind a decent player too. I mean,
yeah, yeah. Caleb Weston was all right. Yeah. so yeah, I mean, it's funny because I look back at that season and I remember at the end of last season when the tournament got like called off, there was like a random simulation out there. I don't remember what it was, but they ran like 50,000 simulations and they crowned Ohio State the champions. And I went back and looked at like the roster today. I'm like, it looks completely different than it looked last year, which is a little interesting because it's not like they had a whole bunch of like one and dones last year. Mm-hmm. But I thought EJ Liddell has really jumped out this year and been a consistent like game in, game out type player. He plays the right way. He's a little bit undersized, like we sort of saw, but not afraid of getting physical. Same with Kyle Young. Like, they're guys that are a little undersized for the position that they're put in, but they purport themselves well. And I think EJ Liddell adding the three this year has been huge. Mm-hmm. I honestly feel like he's still gone a little bit underrated this year.
I agree.
I remember there was a game,
those guys in the Big Ten. I mean, it's just the Big Ten's so good. I mean, it's nothing he's done wrong.
Yeah, obviously, like Luka Garza scoring 60 points a game or that, whatever the hell he's doing. And there's other guys out there that are a little bit. But I remember watching a game two or three weeks ago, and EJ Liddell was having a great game, and whoever was calling it for ESPN was like, he might have a chance at being like making an all Big Ten team. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I was like, I can't imagine this scenario where he's not like first team Big Ten. And I think he made media and maybe second team for coaches, mm-hmm. or vice versa. I don't remember what it was. And he's a guy. What can you really like expect more? Is there anything more you can expect to see out of him? Because I really felt like he grew into, as a sophomore who was being put in a position to really contribute for the first time. I felt like he grew into it really quickly and just got better and better as the season went on. And he's another one of those guys, sort of like CJ Walker. He doesn't hang his head when things are going poorly. Mm-hmm. Real upbeat. He seems like he's always smiling, always enjoying himself, and always playing hard. Yeah. Is he one of those guys that you think in this tournament could be like inserted to the national stage and people will know who he is?
Yes. And I remember watching them last year. And I loved EJ Liddell last year. I kept saying to people I'd watch games, I'm like, oh man, that kid, he has such high, he's such potential. He's a matchup nightmare. If he can like step out a little bit and shoot from the elbow or shoot the three. And that's what he's done this year. I think he has a real chance to make a big name for himself on this stage. I think the best thing for Ohio State is they're not going to be playing Big Ten teams. I think it's going to be so interesting to see what they do outside of this conference, because normally people debate what conference is best. I don't really think you can debate it this year. I really don't. I mean, and the thing with the Big Ten is traditionally they're known as the physical conference. They'll slow you down. They're going to score between like 60 points a game. No.
Ohio State runs.
Michigan,
Iowa. Yeah. They all fill it up.
I mean, Iowa has the most efficient offense in the country, I believe. Ohio State's right there with them. Michigan can light it up because they did it against Ohio State. I mean, it's going to be so wild to see what happens in the tournament just from a Big Ten perspective. But no, I think EJ Liddell definitely has a chance to like make a big name on the scene. I'm also excited to see what Zed Key does, and also Michi Johnson. Those are some guys that can... they won't fill up your stat sheet maybe, but they'll be making big minutes on the floor.
Yeah. I think with what we saw from CJ Walker, I think he's, and you sort of alluded to it a little bit in that he was the one guy that you guys got to talk to. Mm-hmm. I also think that he's kind of the coach when he's on the floor. He's not a starter because he had some injury stuff earlier in the season. So he's not starting, but he's still very much when he's in the game, he's directing everything. And it seems like that's a really natural fit for him.
He reminds me of the Manu Ginobili. Like, he likes coming off the, it seems like he likes coming off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a guy that's willing to do whatever he thinks is best for the team. And he's same sort of way, though. He's not going to fill up the stat sheet much either. No. He's going to go and do the, you know, he'll take a charge here and there. He'll get a steal. He'll make sure that everyone else is where they need to be. And that's all he's really doing. He's not worried about, like, getting his numbers or anything.
But I'll tell you what, if there needs to be a shot made, if you do a little screen for him and he does that dribble pull up, you know, mid range.
I generally hate the, like, 10 to 12 foot, you know, mid range jump shot.
This is money.
Yeah. He's right there with it. He's also incredible at the free throw line. So you love that. I do think, and we've seen it a little bit. We've seen it a couple times recently. Dwayne Washington Jr. is maybe not super consistent, but when he gets going, he's going. Like, I don't remember what he had, 30 something against 32. Illinois. He's had a few 32. He's had a few games where he just
Evan Turner's record.
Really?
In a championship game. Evan Turner set the Big Ten championship record in, oh gosh, was that 2010? Anyone?
11 know. Maybe? I don't know.
I'm close. We'll see. I'm close. Right on. But he set it with 31. And Dwayne.
Oh, so he got the overtime. He got the bump in overtime.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah.
So he's a guy that I think, and we saw it against Illinois, probably more so than Liddell. I think Liddell's a little more consistent. Mm-hmm. Dwayne Washington's a little bit more up and down. And it's not to say that he's ever really that down. But he started off pretty rough against Illinois and then just completely turned it on in the second half and carried him to get that, you know, to make that a game. He's another guy I think that is capable of sort of making a name for himself, and people that watch that don't watch a whole lot of Big Ten basketball are like, oh, who the hell's this guy? And how have we not heard of him before? Yeah. But the one thing that sort of jumps out at me is, as this team has been pretty good all year, and they had that little lull where they lost four in a row, but there's not a whole lot of like NBA talent on this team.
No,
and I don't think there's anyone. Yeah. There's two seniors and they're CJ Walker and Cal Young, mm-hmm. who neither one of them's big NBA guys. Both of them might try to come back next year. There's no one going to the NBA, right?
No, not after this season. And it's so funny because I did a story for our sports show. Has it been a month ago now with Sports Illustrated's Pat Forty? And we talked about what is going on with the Blue Bloods. And it's not, you look at the top 10 in college basketball this year, you know those schools, like, you know the names, like, you know who Illinois is, you know who Gonzaga is, but let's face it, the usual suspects, Kansas might be the exception, was nowhere to be found. And I asked Pat about that. I was like, is that just this year? Because let's face it, COVID made everything different. There were no preseason games. There were no exhibition games. So lots of those schools that have young talent, the talent didn't get the, like, you know, whooping games where, you know, you get to play extra minutes and do dumb crap and then you move on. But I asked Pat, is that just this year? And he said, no, that is where this is headed. And that's why you see, even though these are schools that aren't Blue Bloods, they are programs. So these aren't the schools that are just getting these, like, one and done. They are schools that are bringing in talent. They are developing talent. And like you said, Travis, look what Chris Holtmann has done. I mean, he got hired the same year as Archie Miller.
And I will fully admit, mea culpa here, I was bummed when Archie Miller went to Indiana because I thought he was the heir apparent to that. He just seemed like a perfect fit.
He did.
And I don't know that it was totally fair that he got canned from Indiana, but I will say I wouldn't trade him for Chris Holtmann right now. He's done an incredible job.
And Chris has brought in some really good players. I mean, like, it's not like they've had these scrubs. I mean, no, these are good players, but they develop. And like look what EJ Liddell has done in a year. Think of what that kid's going to look like next year. I mean, it's amazing. Michi Johnson, that kid's supposed to be in high school.
Yeah, and local kid here from Cleveland.
From Cleveland. That's right. And already on the defensive end, he is a stud. I mean, you put him in and you're not worried.
That's sort of an interesting story too. They just went to him and they're like, hey, the season's not going to matter either way. Why don't you just come play? He said, yeah, okay, what the hell? I'll be there. And he gives him spurts here and there. Like, he's not playing a ton of minutes, which is kind of be expected because he plays, you know, joined minutes. Real late. Yeah, and he gives you exactly what you want from him in that time. And it's the one thing that kind of jumps out at me. And you, Whitney, you spent the last, before you moved to Columbus last year, you spent the 6 years prior in Louisville, where you were covering Kentucky and Louisville. Kentucky probably a little more so than Louisville. 100% depends on the one and done guys to carry them year in and year out. And Ohio State couldn't be doing it any more differently than that. So as someone who's sort of seen both sides of it, what jumps out to you about why maybe other than COVID, I know everyone will sort of lean on that, but there's gotta be more to it than just, oh, they, you know, they didn't have a couple months of practice or whatever.
There is. And sometimes what happens, this is not the first time Cal's had a dud of a team. This is the worst situation. But the Nerlens Noel year, they went to the NIT because they got busted in the first round by, who was that? Was it like Murray State? Or it was somebody like a smaller school. And so that was when the year Nerlens got hurt. And so that definitely hurt them. But yeah, what happens sometimes when you bring in those one and dones is if you're recruiting just talent, you're not necessarily recruiting pieces that are going to work together. And that is what so many of these other like schools have done, is you look at the puzzle. You don't look at just who is the best player and I'm just going to throw it all in together. And I know there's more to it than what John Calipari does put more into it than that. But in the most simplest terms, that is what it is. And when you even look at some of the programs, the one and dones, I think mostly of Duke and Kentucky. If you look at the other, even the Blue Bloods, they don't really do it. They have maybe one. I mean, look at North Carolina. They get maybe like one or two. Kansas gets like one. They don't rely on it as much. And I think that's why they both kind of survived this year. But that is really where I think college basketball, and thank goodness, because I love watching kids develop over 4 years or 3 years or whatever it is. I think it's better.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.
And going back sort of to the conversation you mentioned with Pat Forty, I felt like we were getting to a point where college basketball was being, I don't want to say dominated, because it didn't seem like these guys were winning year in and year out.
They weren't.
But all of the conversation for most of these seasons was around like Zion Williamson and the five-star guys Cal signed that year. And that was sort of dictating conversation all season long. Especially if the NBA gets rid of the one and done rule and allows guys to come straight in. Do we think it's shifting back? We look at it this year, it feels like it kind of already has, but do we think this will be a more permanent shift where, look at Gonzaga, they're all kids that have been there a long time, right? Yeah. They're all kids that have been part of the program and developed, and they're juniors and seniors, and they're not just relying on a freak athlete. They're relying on five guys that know how to play together.
Look at the champions the last few years. I'm trying to remember, and Kentucky won it in 2012 with one and done. I'm trying to think of who, when did Duke won it after them? Yeah. So Duke won it, was it 2014 or 2016?
I want to say 14. I don't think 16.
It's been a few years. So I do. This is headed in that direction. I think it is heading, because you look at the champions of these recent years, they have been programs, not just ones and one and dones. And it's definitely going that way. And I'll tell you what, you talk to Kentucky fan base, they don't like it. They don't like getting to, like, they're okay with it if they're winning. They've won one title in this Cal time.
Yeah, it's cool seeing these, like, it's cool getting, you know, five of the top 10 kids every year, but you still want to win.
And that's a fan base that wants to know those players.
It was Robert Morris who took them out in the NIT.
There it is. Thank you.
You do not go into Moon Township and go up against Bobby Moe and get out unscathed. Trevor, I was glad you mentioned Duke as well, because that was the other program that immediately came to mind. And I do kind of wonder how it's going to kind of change college basketball. Like you guys were saying, the one and done rule with the NBA might change. Yeah, that there's been a lot of talk around that, but we're already seeing things happening more with the G League.
Sure.
You know, there's that one team, I think they're based out of where, California, that's not even affiliated with any of the NBA teams. It's just like an independent G League team that, you know, that's another option for players to just bypass high school entirely and go that route as well.
Or the LaMelo Ball route, and you go overseas.
Right. Yep. That's another one.
I think the G League erases a little bit of that risk. The guys are a little more comfortable with that. And I don't know. Personally, I think that's a good idea. I don't think it's any different than like minor league baseball. Like,
because here's the thing. Like, it's the first, if they get rid of the one and done, the first maybe few years, a bunch of kids will go. And that's okay. I think what's eventually going to happen is they're going to realize, oh, this is like a big jump. And there's some that'll be fine. I mean, let's face it. Zion Williamson could have probably gone and he would have been okay. You know?
Yeah, I mean.
But everybody's going to realize eventually, like, they're not Kobe. They're not LeBron. They're not Kevin Garnett.
That's the thing, too, is I don't know if the one and done really prevent it. If you were a senior in high school who your senior year, you're like, well, I would go to the NBA, but I can't, so I'm going to go here anyway. You're going to go to college, and you're still just going to go pro. It's not going to change your decision. Like, how many kids are like, oh, maybe I should stay in college? Like, I don't know that it really benefits anyone. It might benefit the NBA teams a little bit in that they're not, you know, drafting Kwame Browns and shit, but
I wish they would really go towards, like you said, a minor league baseball or like a hockey situation. You know what I mean? And you can even maybe use college as a developmental way. But the thing that so many of these kids, and I'll say it to anyone who's listening, I am most 90% of the time pro athlete. These kids want to start making money because so many of them have the pressure to provide for their families. And as someone who was a college athlete and got that air quote stipend, it's not enough.
have you seen anything that's been going on in Indianapolis this week? There's been the hashtag among the players.
There's
kind of a growing sentiment, and the drum beat's getting a little louder, I think, from a lot of the players unhappy with, I guess you call that imbalance in the structure right now.
It's a mess. And the speaking of imbalance, I actually just tweeted about it before I came on to talk.
I was going
to
ask you about it.
The discrepancy between amenities between the men's tournament and the women's tournament.
So I have to ask real quick before you go and explain the rest. Are the tournaments happening at the same time?
Yes.
Okay. I had no idea when the women's was starting, but you have to see this picture.
Women's selection is always the Monday after selection Sunday. And I know this coming from Louisville. The Louisville women's team, for those who don't know, is incredible. I got to cover so many great men's basketball games while I was there, but I got to cover better women's basketball, and it was a gem to cover. I was here in Columbus for the Final Four when the Louisville women made it. That was the greatest Final Four between all four teams. All three games were insane. Columbus was an awesome place to have it. So this picture, for those who haven't seen, it's of the men's weight area, like weights, like lifting weights. And it's like a Planet Fitness in there. I mean, it is this huge setup that they've made inside this conference room of a hotel, basically. The women's picture is a rack of dumbbells that you would probably have in your basement or in your garage, like the triangle the triangle with the dumbbells, not even like a rack, like a triangle of dumbbells.
It's like the little like stand thing.
Yes.
And it's just got like a few different weights on the sides.
So the NCAA comes out today and says, oh, well, there just wasn't enough space and we were going to make it bigger as the tournament got bigger, as the tournament moved on and we got more space. So like a manager for the South Carolina women's team goes in there, takes a video and starts on the weights and then zooms out and turns around. It's an entire
conference room. It's a gigantic room. It's huge.
Well, not to mention, it's like, huge. Why are you adding more equipment as you're reducing the number of teams as you go along? Like, if anything, you need fewer machines to lift right. on. That's,
The video was amazing because the way he did it was brilliant. It started like in the exact same place that the picture was taken. And then he just zoomed out and turned around. Like, it's just...
I'm glad they put him on blast then. That's ridiculous.
The thing about it that was kind of confusing to me is like, why even bother with the one rack?
That's almost more insulting.
Exactly. Yeah. The better answer is, oh, we thought we were going to, and then we ran out of stuff. It's like, no, we thought this was enough, so we just stuck with it.
Wow.
It's bad.
Whitney, I wanted to... go around a little bit around the bracket here while we've still got a couple more minutes. One other team I wanted to mention, have you gotten a chance to see much of Cleveland State at all this year?
Yes.
Definitely a program with some local interest here in Cleveland.
Absolutely. I've gotten to see all three Ohio programs. Before I get to Cleveland State, just real quick, I'm going to say watch out for OU. That is a dang good team. I did a story on Jason Preston. For those who don't know his backstory, it is absolutely one of those heartbreaking, oh my gosh, how did this kid get here situations. Cleveland State, they played Ohio State. And actually after that game, Chris Holtman said he was concerned with how his team handled physical play, which is kind of funny when you see where this team is now. But that's who Cleveland State is. And he mentioned it specifically at the guard position. He said those guards play very physical and they will get up in you defensively and they just will not give you any room. So I think that, yeah, they could be very scary for a team that, you know, comes in a little bit like, oh, although it is funny that means Kelvin Sampson's going back to Bloomington. I was very excited about that.
The NCAA, there are no coincidences.
None.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the Ohio State game for Cleveland State because I think it was right before that Cleveland State played OU, and that was that game that the Bobcats went on the 40-0 run, and I think ended up winning by like 50 or 60 points.
Crazy.
And that was, there was a great story this week talking with Dennis Gates, the Cleveland State coach, and he said that sequence there of games was really the turning point for their whole season.
Yeah,
because the OU game was the low point, and then they had that game with Ohio State.
They played very well.
They lost, but they were extremely competitive, and it kind of took the light on for them to say, like, "Hey, we can do this. We can play. The season's not gonna get away from us here." So.
Yeah,
they were kind of fun to watch in the Horizon League tournament. Trav and I flipped them on a couple nights. Texted each other like, "Hey, you got to turn on ESPN Plus. This is fun."
Yeah, I was sitting in the hospital watching CSU basketball.
I love that.
Did not know this is what I'd be doing with my life, but
I think that all the time.
Yeah,
like when I'm standing like outside like a locker room filled with like 18 to 22 year olds waiting to go in, I'm like, this is what I'm doing with my life. Yeah.
Could be worse.
Who
All right, Whitney, so I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Ooh.
If Ohio State wins it all, for Ohio State to win it all, they need to blank.
Does that be one word or a phrase?
Follow it on whatever the hell you want.
To win it all, Ohio State needs to play complete games. They need to not have those lulls like we've seen where they go like 3 to 5 minutes and don't score. They need to play complete games.
Yeah. Got to land the plane. They had a few games down the stretch there where the finishing stretches got a little bumpy.
Got to land the plane.
I don't know how many times in the Big Ten tournament they were up by 10 and then 5 minutes later game was tied again.
And then against Illinois, total opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and more power to them because they fought back into the game. But I mean, when I was watching, I think if you were someone who has watched Ohio State over the last month, in that Michigan game, they got up like 11 or 12, and I'm like, guarantee this is like a one possession game at the end of the game. Oh, guarantee it. And that's what happened. And it's, and I don't know what it is about them that they sort of lack that. I don't want to say they lack like the killer instinct or whatever. That's just sort of cliche and lazy. But there's something about when they get a comfortable lead, they play a little bit different. Do you think their defense is good enough to win?
Yes. If their defense plays the way they did. So if you look at the Illinois game, don't look at the final score. Because Illinois started off like halfway through the first half, they had 25 points. That means that they were on pace for 100 plus, right?
Ohio State started off terrible.
Terrible. And they didn't get there. So after those first 10 minutes, the defense did kick in. And a lot of it was they were forcing Kofi Coburn to like make a play and not just catch and like turn around and dunk, because he's a large man and can just dunk over anyone.
I don't know how many times during that game I just yelled, foul the shit out of him. Every time he touched the ball, I wanted him to hack him.
Just foul him.
Yeah.
So I think if their defense plays the way they did against Michigan, yes, they can. The question's going to be, what kind of offenses are they going to play? Because you know in the NCAA tournament, you're going to get some team that plays like a full court press. And it's just
they struggled against the press when it showed up in the tournament.
Everyone does, because like you're gonna get like a West Virginia or somebody like that, and you never see it. And don't get me started on how referees never call fouls, because they're like, oh, well, that's just how they play defense. No, a reach-in's a reach-in, and I don't want to hear about it.
But Teddy won't be there, so no concerns.
Yes. Oh, no Teddy. Oh,
womp, the worst.
Womp,
give me a Cinderella story in the bracket here.
Not OU.
No! Yeah,
besides,
you can't pick
OU.
OU's not a Cinderella anymore. Literally,
no, they're not.
Everyone is picking OU. I'm not a Cinderella.
President Obama put him in the Sweet 16.
I saw that.
He's just trying to get votes in a swing state. No one told him Ohio's not going blue anytime soon.
No.
I think Texas is closer at this point.
Unfortunately.
Okay. I'm trying to think. I'll be very honest. I think I've only looked at a full bracket twice. Because I've just been so focused on the Ohio teams and what they're going to do. It wouldn't be a real Cinderella, I'll say, but I think a team to really watch out for is Oklahoma State. They're not like a double number seed or anything like that, but they, in my opinion, have probably been the best team since mid-February that like no one's really talking about, because the Big 12, kind of like the Big 10, was very good this year. I mean, they have one of the best players in the country in Cade Cunningham. He is probably maybe going to be the number one overall pick in the draft this year.
I was going to say, that's the rallying cry among a certain segment of Cavs fans, fade for Cade.
And watch him, because he is amazing. And it's not just that he's a good player. He's so smart and he knows how to involve his teammates. And that's what makes them so good. Like there will be games where you look and you're like, wow, Cade Cunningham's having a quiet, he has 15 points. How? Because he just does all these different things. So not really probably a Cinderella, but probably a team that might be a bit of a sleeper, if that makes it, maybe a Snow White.
They're a four seed.
I know, but no one's really talking about them.
I feel like, I think I agree with you, because I see a ton of stuff about Cade Cunningham. I see people that, you know, they'll flip on Oklahoma State and they'll talk about how good Cade Cunningham is. I don't know that anyone talks about anything else other than him. I don't think really people really acknowledge that they're a pretty damn good team.
Really good.
Outside of him.
Yeah. They've got shooters. They've got some size. They play strong inside. They are a good team. But like I said, kind of like the Big 10, there were so many good teams in the Big 12. So I think, like I said, they're like a sleeper for me. A Cinderella. I mean, yeah, OU has been my pick before it got cool. Like... yeah, now I'm not cool. It's like I feel like like I'm in high school and I'm like, oh, I don't like this band anymore because everybody else does.
Everybody else is talking about. Yeah, Tino texted me earlier today about OU because everyone is liking them. It's like, it's almost like that guarantees they're gonna lose.
I know
how much people are in on them. Almost feels like the kiss of death. But
when I was talking with the OU radio guys, I said, you know, it concerns me a little bit that they've gotten this trendy, especially when they're going to be playing in the only site that has no fans. Every other arena that they're playing in, these tournament games, there's at least some fans. And this one, right. You know, it's empty. And one of the best things in March Madness is watching a crowd, you know, everybody outside of the favorite section, the entire rest of the arena all rallies around an underdog. Yes. And they're not going to get that bump. So
I'm trying
we'll
find
see what
a
happens.
Bracket real quick to see if I can give a better answer.
All right, quick trivia question. I'm 99.9% positive, Whitney, you know the answer to this. If you did before like the last week, don't answer. Tino, where is Oral Roberts?
I do know this.
I
think you only know this because of where you grew up.
I know this because of a certain coach.
Okay.
And yes, where I grew up. I'm going to search on this one.
It's in Oklahoma.
Yes.
My initial guess when one of my buddies asked me the same question was, I want to say Pennsylvania, but I know that I'm just thinking of Robert Morris. So I have no idea.
Yes, it's in Oklahoma. And I know that because for those listening, my whole family is from Kansas. And there is a very prominent coach in Kansas who used to be a head coach at Oral Roberts.
Oh, I would not have made that connection.
By the name of Bill Self.
Well-known fact.
Okay, I'm still looking to see if I can. This is like the smallest font. You know you're old when. Like,
how about this? Because you've watched a lot of Big Ten. Is there any team outside of Ohio State, Michigan, who else was a high seed? I think Iowa was a high
seed.
Illinois was. Yeah. Okay. So
yes,
of like the Rutgers, Maryland, I'm trying to think of who else is a lower seed. Michigan State didn't get in. Or
First
Michigan
of all,
State's
the
a
fact,
play-in.
The fact that you've got three teams in one conference that could legitimately win the national title and nobody would be surprised is really impressive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Michigan State is in, actually.
Did they win? Did they play today and win?
They're the late game.
They're the late game. And honestly, like, if they get the win and they're in, I never want to bet against Tom Izzo in March. Ever. I don't care who, like, I could see them doing like what Syracuse did. Remember when Syracuse was like the 11 seed a few years ago and they had the play-in game and they got all the way to the Sweet 16 and everybody's just going, where is this team been?
I mean, look at the UConn team that won it as a 9 seed. Like, it only takes one guy. At Michigan State, they might have that guy. I don't know who he is. Like, I don't know which one it would be, but
maybe Ohio
they always
State.
Recruit really well. And if
Michigan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I never want to go against Tom Izzo in March. I mean, Purdue's a 4 seed, so they're not super low, but Purdue is really good. I would say Purdue is probably one of the more underrated teams in the Big Ten, kind of like the Oklahoma State in the Big 12, kind of a similar scenario in that there were just so many good teams, people kind of forgot about them, but Purdue is really good. They beat Ohio State twice. So Purdue is really good. I'm still looking for that Cinderella. I'm still liking my Oklahoma State, but I'll find something there.
I'll let you stick with OU.
Yay!
I'll take your word for it that you had them before.
I did, because I love Jason Preston. Ever since I did that story with him, he is, I think, who was it? Someone went on the big outlets did a story with him this week saying a sports writer might be the best player you don't know in the tournament. And that's true. Like, he had no intention of playing college basketball and actually was starting to take classes at a school in Florida for sports writing. Like, for sports
journalism.
He was
covering the Pistons for like SB Nation or something?
Yeah. He was an NBA like little like beat sports writer. And he had a buddy that said, hey, come to this like AAU, come play for my AAU team or something like that. And he went and played and suddenly blew up. And I say blew up in that he got a college scholarship to go to OU. And then he dropped like a ridiculous amount of points on Illinois.
That's right. That was kind of the arrival.
They should have won that game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Whitney, you promised us 20 minutes, so you have given us almost 45. This has been fantastic.
I can talk basketball for hours.
I love it. I love it. This has been great, and I feel like I'm ready for March Madness now. So
yes. Thanks
a lot for joining us. This was fun.
Always a pleasure.
All right. As a reminder, you can subscribe to The Nail on the Coffin on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast listening platform. You can also stream us on waitingfornextyear.com. Speaking of waiting for next year, support us on Patreon, patreon.com/WFNY, and hit that nail in the coffin tier. Our thanks again to Whitney Harding. For Travis Yulee, I'm Tom Valentino. It's been The Nail in the Coffin, part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. We'll catch you again soon.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!